Stuck in a job you hate? Wish you could break into tech, but don't know where to start? CBG Nuggets makes IT training simple, affordable, and dare we say, fun. With short, engaging videos and hands-on virtual labs, you can build real-world skills right from your browser. No expensive hardware, no confusing software. Just practical training that gets you job ready. Learn at your own pace, on your own schedule, from anywhere. Start your 7-day free trial at cbtnuggets.com. Because a better career is just a few clicks away.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM. Joining me this week, as he has been a lot recently, is Matt Roth. Matt, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken.
Always a pleasure, Ben. And Voss still in the process of opening a restaurant. He'll be back. We know for the regular season, but it's a struggle to get started with any new venture like this. And we wish him the best. So Matt, looking at the Ravens, we had some interesting stuff come out of the winter meeting. I kind of want to save that best for last. Maybe take a look at the free agency tracker as we stand right now with the Ravens and their players who remain unsigned from last year's roster.
Yeah. So starting off with Steven Sims was signed by the Seahawks. In my opinion, I thought he did an okay job last year. I'm not sure if it's terribly too big of a loss. I think that his role can be replaced by a draft pick. So, you know, looking forward to see the Ravens get younger and maybe something new there. Although, you know, getting younger and, you know, getting a shiny new toy doesn't always turn out, but hopeful for what we can get in that role.
There are a lot of different types of wide receivers they might go for in the draft, but I think they will get somebody with those one of those 11 picks that will fill both a role on offense or defense and also a return role. And Sims is a fairly specific player. He did come in and have a nice 15-yard run in the Bills game, right? He had the 15-yard run.
Yeah, I think
the,
so.
On the drive for a touchdown, he did some, you know, certainly some positive things for the Ravens. He also had some difficulty in terms of not getting under punts properly, letting them drop, and having some problems with butterfingers as well. So, it definitely a player who can be replaced, and I think the Ravens will have options in terms of the draft to do so. I guess we move on. Is Christian Welch is the second guy who was been lost. He signed with the Packers. You know, Christian Welch personally is not a big loss. Okay, obviously he was a guy who had a fairly limited role with the Ravens. Came on in the second half and was active for some games, playing special teams, and eventually, you know, was added to the 53. But a guy who, you know, did not have a big role certainly by any stretch for the Ravens. Why this is more painful than it otherwise would be is the Ravens have already lost Chris Board and Malik Harrison, two special team standouts who were 800 combined special team snaps outside of the to signings with other teams.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, Jake Hummel's obviously going to come in and provide some, you know, supplemental help on special teams, which should be good. I wouldn't be surprised to see Christian Welch back. I think he has a pretty high likelihood of being cut either in training camp before the rosters are fully formed for the Packers or at some time in the middle of the year. I mean, honestly, I think there's a fairly decent chance he's back just judging by what we've seen over the past few years. Like you said, there's going to be some turnover on special teams. I'm hoping it's not like the turnover in offensive line coaching and some of the offensive line players where it took a while to get the penalties under control and maybe to get the unit fully cohesive, though they did pull that together by the end of the year, which was nice. I think we could see maybe a little bit of a bumpy run on special teams and hoping we can avoid that.
Yeah, it's a lot of leadership gone, that's for sure, out of that unit. And Chris Board had the C patch by the end of the year. Malik Harrison had that role in a fairly significant way, though Malik played a lot of defense this last year as well. And now the Ravens, I mean, inside linebacker is going to be a position where I think they'll look to add in the draft, maybe even a double dip. But I think at a minimum, they'll get a UDFA they like and an inside linebacker that they draft. It's not a tremendously crowded pick. I always say that by position group because after the first couple of picks, everybody's got a lot of warts. Everybody's got real big questions about whether or not they're going to be able to play at the NFL level. And, you know, honestly, the inside linebacker group, while it has a few good players, certainly, I don't see the Ravens making a high draft pick there, even though they have significant need potentially on the weak side to replace Simpson, whether it's this year or next, if this is to be a true prove it year for Simpson.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that we, like you said, once you get past the first 2 to 7 or so linebackers, it's kind of a crapshoot. And, you know, I think the Ravens have found, you know, good success. They know what they're looking for on special teams. And, you know, I was pretty surprised when they drafted Sanusi Kane, right? But obviously they were looking at it for a very specific role, a pretty big special teams role. So, well, you know, Sanusi Kane may never be a big player on defense. You know, they found him for this role. And like you said, I think maybe one drafted linebacker and then one undrafted player is probably going to fit the bill for this spot.
All right. That makes a total of 7 players who've left the team now. There's still some unsigned players out there. We've been over these. We don't want to go over them every week or anything, but Nelson Aguilar is still out there. Deontay Hardy, Deontay Johnson, Josh Johnson, Christian Matthew, Brent Urban, and Tre'Davious White. I think there's 3 interesting names there, but is there an interesting name to you you'd like to bring up first?
Yeah, I think Tre'Davious White is probably the most likely to get the most playing time. If I look at that group in the league this year, right, from whichever team that he signs for, I thought he played serviceable cornerback. I'm definitely worried about someone with his lower body injuries at his age, just really being able to play all that well in the future. But I definitely think he's worthy of being on a roster more so than some of the other folks out there. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I like Tre'Davious White. I was hoping they could re-sign him. I think the Ravens were in a position where they wanted to sign one veteran guy to a 1-year contract. They don't want to have more than that probably on the roster at one time. Awuzie made a lot of sense from a financial perspective. And he may have also been the better cover guy. He really had a good year last year. And we went over that in a separate show. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but look out there for the Awuzie signing podcast if you want to get into that specifically. But I think it was a matter of money. I think, you know, Tre'Davious White might have been $3 million with a need to have incentives there to take it to 5, perhaps, after the year he had. And Awuzie is on an offset contract where he's being paid by Tennessee, $7.5 million. And whatever the Ravens pay him just counts against that. So Awuzie is not incented in any way to try and get more money out of the Ravens, which is perfect, you know. And it's kind of a dividend you get for being a contending team is that you get to make signings like this on the margin, where you get to sign a pretty good player who's on an offset contract at the vet minimum. So that's a really nice arrangement for the Ravens based on you know, what they do. Awuzie talked about it as the Ravens checking all the boxes.
Yeah, for sure. You know, some other, you know, the Titans loss is our gain. So really hoping that he can provide solid value in maybe the 4th cornerback spot, give or take. You know, don't want to go into it too much. I will say his injury history, I think it was a groin, an ACL, a hamstring over the years. Certainly someone who I don't think can take a full load necessarily, but as your 3rd or 4th or 5th corner, I think someone who's very serviceable, been around the league, happy he's on the team. And like you said, I think the Tre'Davious White versus Chidobe Awuzie is really a money decision. You know, maybe one's a little slightly better, but if Tre'Davious White's looking for a couple mil plus maybe the ability to double that in incentives, this is just so much more of an affordable signing. And we're at the point where we're using void years for anybody and everybody that we sign, even small minimal amounts. And so, you know, this is the couch cushions that Eric DaCosta is looking under, and you do have to save a couple bucks here and there. And this is a good example of that.
Yeah, this is, I would say this is even more than that. This could have saved the team $2 million. If that's true, you know, you can't pass it up when the opportunity comes up. 2 other players on the list. Deontay Johnson is obviously not going to be back, but it looks like at this point, he's not going to contribute to the comp formula. He'd have to be signed before the draft effectively. And then after the draft, you have a signing period that does not affect the comp pick formula. It doesn't look like anybody's kind of biting on that very limp looking bait there to give Deontay Johnson a value in the comp formula. So it doesn't seem to help the Ravens that they re-signed him at the end of the year. They may have actually paid a few dollars to do that, paid a week or two of his salary at the end of the year. So it's unfortunate that didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I think with him, I think he's starting to look like one of the hot dogs in the gas station that's been on the rollers for far too long. It's just, you know, at some point in time, it just looks so unappealing. I mean, you know, Ken, how many teams has this guy burned through, right? I mean, even in the course of a 12-month period, you go through some, you know, maybe some non-prominent organizations like the Panthers, but you know, you were on the Steelers, you're on the Ravens, right? You were on the Texans. Those are some pretty
three
good
teams that made the playoffs out of four.
And not one of them really could see, you know, wanting you on the roster. So, you know, I'm actually wouldn't be shocked if he's out of the league, because at some point in time, how much does he really add relative to what it seems like he subtracts, right? He seems like he's a true negative, so I think he may get one more shot, and he really needs to make sure that he has his attitude in the right spot, because he's really going to blow it.
You are exactly right on that, because he's already really a three-time loser in the last year. Could say he's a four-time loser. Pittsburgh, I guess, traded him and didn't technically, get rid of him in the same way. But it's any NFL team is going to look at him with a jaundiced eye at this point. So the next team he signs with, got to be a model citizen, got to go to camp, got to do what's asked of him, got to not complain. Got to work hard and make the team, and then try and make the most of whatever opportunities he does get. I expect whatever opportunity he gets next is not going to be much. It might be in a punt return role, might be in a very limited kind of a gadget and limited kind of slot role, but it's not going to be, he's wide receiver one or two for certainly any team that's any good. That said, injuries happen in the NFL. Deontay Johnson's name is probably going to come up again before the 2025 season is over. And more than likely, some team is going to say, let me just put this revolver to my head with one bullet in it and hope it doesn't go off and go ahead and sign him.
Yeah, that's for sure. I was thinking, Ken, that might be a revolver where there's five bullets and there's one that doesn't have a bullet. Low likelihood.
Yeah. All right. Let's stop dissing on Deontay for a while. Move on to Brent Urban. He's kind of, last few years, he's been in a wait and see mode. Every year he gets invited to camp, he gets signed to a deal, it's usually non-guaranteed, then he gets cut, then he gets re-added after the injuries have played out on what are known as handshake arrangements. I think he's probably in that same position again. One thing that really helped him this week was Calais Campbell re-signing with the Arizona Cardinals. I think that certainly would have been heavy competition for his spot on the roster specifically had Campbell been signed by the Ravens.
Yeah, one year, $5.5 million for Calais, I think up to $2 million of additional incentives. So that he could get $7.5 million at the age of, he'll be 39 at the start of the season, Ken. I mean, I was really hoping we could get Calais to come back. You know, he's made $150 million, come back on a, vet min deal, maybe a few incentives, but to come back to win a ring. But, I think the opportunity to get $7.5 million was just too much to pass up for him. I think he could become trade bait, come week 8, 7, or 8 of the season. And, if Arizona's not going anywhere, you might be able to get him for, a seventh or something to that effect. And really, Arizona might just be trying to do a solid for him at that point. Hey, where do you want to go? We'll take a seventh or maybe a next year seventh for him or something like
that. Yeah, hopefully all his salary gets accelerated at that point. But it's true. They'll be looking to unload a little bit of cap dollars if they're not in it. And they're the Arizona Cardinals. There's a pretty good chance they're not in it at that point in the season. So just the way life works. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about the owners' meetings. I guess I want to finish with the rule changes. Harbaugh had some interesting things to say. Kind of a lot of it was centered around the extension he received through the 2028 season. Did we do that show together, or did I do that by myself? I'm trying to remember.
I think you did it with someone else.
Okay.
Yeah, or maybe by yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we don't need to go too deep into that. The Harbaugh extension show is out there. I know there's a lot of people who aren't really happy about it. it's a great time for you guys to go off and lick your own wounds, frankly. Avoids a lame duck season in this coming year. That's something they always try and avoid. So the next chance that Harbaugh is really gone will be after the 2027 season, prior to 28, when he'll be on a lame duck contract again. And there's then the opportunity to mutually agree to part ways at that point. But I do not see any likely path to Harbaugh being fired, let go anytime before then. Where were you on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you heard the interview with him and Bisciotti, they really seem to trust each other. They have a really good working rapport. You know, Bisciotti's got a good eye for talent. I don't think John's going anywhere anytime soon. So I think he'll be here for the foreseeable future. I think there's pros and cons to that. I think it's ultimately a pro. Maybe a few drawbacks here and there. But, you know, at the end of the day for John, you've been given some really good teams. And over the next couple of years, the team looks like it's going to continue to be really good. You know, championships aren't guaranteed. And, you know, you could certainly not win one. But, you know, this is as good a time as any to win one. And, you know, whatever it is, whether it's not running the ball, players making mistakes, maybe a poor game plan here or there, you know, we've got to find some way to overcome it and get a championship. I don't need two or three or four championships, but you know, you have one of the best players I think that's ever played in the NFL at the most important position with a great team around him. You know, this team needs a championship.
Yeah, I agree. And it will really cement Harbaugh's legacy to get one. He's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame if he continues the level of success he has through this next contract, if even without winning a championship. If he does win a championship, absolutely rock solid guarantee he's in. But he right now he's at the top of a whole bunch of categories in coaching, at or near the top, obviously. He's like seventh in winning percentage among coaches who have coached exclusively since the merger. And he's first, I believe, in road playoff wins ever. That's a prestigious one, frankly, because you know, you play in a division that's tough, and you're not, you know, you can play in a division and be Buffalo now or what New England was, and there's nobody else in your division, and you're fairly much guaranteed easy divisional wins, an easy path to a home game to start the playoffs, and you don't play very much on the road. The Patriots never did. In fact, Bill Belichick has how many road playoff wins, would you guess? He's a total career. He's got 31 total playoff wins. How many on the road? Not neutral site.
Three.
That's important.
Three on the road, non-neutral site.
Three, you would say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's four, actually. So that's amazing to me. Is that, you know, and Harbaugh has 10. Harbaugh, in fact, is 10-9 on the road, which considering the record of road playoff teams is also remarkable. But in any case, he had some other interesting things to say during his press conference. And some of them are just, yeah, I'd love to have that. I'd love to see that. They're kind of coach speaky. One of them, he would like to have Derrick Henry extended. Well, terrific. Not a great negotiating tactic to do that, but there's no question about Henry's value. I don't think really. So in his case, I don't think it really matters. I wouldn't talk that way about certain other players that are on the Ravens currently.
Yeah, that's for sure, Ken. I think the Derrick Henry thing is interesting. I think we have Derrick Henry at a pretty.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis. So you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies. And let me tell you, takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Be fair to favorable price next year. I'm personally not in any rush to sign a 31-year-old running back who I have for one season at a good price for anything close to the wild Saquon Barkley deal right. That he got. You're good for Saquon, right? He should make his money. But I thought that contract was a bit much. I think running backs fall off a cliff. I think if there's one running back who wouldn't fall off a cliff, that Henry is the most likely with the way he cares for his body, his size, his vision, you know, his knowledge of the game. But, you know, I don't see a need to rush that. And I think if I'm Derrick Henry, I've made enough money in my career, right? That I want to win, and I want to be.
All right. We're having some audio problems. I'm sure he's going to be right back, but I'll just continue on with the next topic because Harbaugh has also talked about extending Lamar at some point. Said he'll be the highest paid QB when he does. I don't think there's any question about that. Almost every one of the we have Matt back. Matt, I ask you to turn off your video if you would, and that might help some of these audio problems. Talking about Lamar Jackson, though, he obviously will be the highest paid quarterback on his next deal. They'll find some way to make it be so. There seems to be a large component of the Twitterverse and of social media in general that thinks somehow the Ravens are out to screw Lamar Jackson. Absolutely not. I think the only thing that kind of is woven into there is they want to make Lamar Jackson a partner in how this team is put together. And part of Lamar Jackson being a partner is being a Brady-esque partner where he might actually take a little less money or sign on more favorable terms with the Ravens. And I don't think that's inappropriate. The Ravens are given an enormous contract. He's going to earn every dollar on it. And every both sides are, I hope, very happy with that arrangement. And then the next time around, for additional years, it doesn't have to be necessarily, less dollars than the highest other paid quarterback. It's going to be more. It's just a question of having the terms and whatnot be favorable, having both parties trust each other, and having reasonable expectations of the rest of the offense that's going to be built around Lamar based on any like small amount of savings that might accrue from concessions Lamar might make.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ken. I don't think the Ravens are out to screw Lamar. I think that they want to partner with him. They want to work together with him. And frankly, Eric, John, Lamar, their legacy is tied together. They need to win, right? Mm-hmm. And in football, there's a finite amount of dollars with the salary cap. And, you know, Lamar's not going to go hungry. His family's not going to go hungry. And any dollar that isn't spent on him is going to be spent on another player. That's how the Ravens do it, right? They're not coming in $20 million under the salary cap. So to me, you know, the way I judge them screwing Lamar or not isn't if they save a couple dollars on a contract here or there. It's if they don't put the offensive line in front of him. They don't give him the skilled position players. Right. And I think they've really done a good job of doing that. So I think any talk of the Ravens trying to pull one over on Lamar is a bit crazy. Yeah, sure, maybe the Willie Snead years back in the day, we were a bit light on some offensive talent. But, you know, that Lamar took that team from 0 to 60 so fast that it just took a little bit of time to assemble it, right? You went through Hollywood Brown. You had to get Bateman, go through the injury issue, get Zay. It took some time to get there. But I think any talk of the Ravens screwing Lamar is a bit crazy. And, you know, if Lamar leaves a couple bucks on the table, it's just going to be to help him in a different way.
Yeah. Yep. I'm there too. Harbaugh mentioned that Andrews will play with the Ravens in 2025. I think that's apparent to everybody now with the fact that the Ravens already paid his $4 million roster bonus. So I don't think that's a surprise or anything, but Harbaugh also mentioned that. Let's move on though with the interesting thing coming out of the meetings were rule changes. So there's a few things that have been on the table they haven't decided on yet, and there's three or four that they did. So one is the tush push. So it's up. It's been talked about. As of right now, the owners have deferred any judgment on it. They've kicked the can down the road. Does not mean it still cannot be acted upon for the 2025 season, but it has not been as of now. Where do you stand on that, Matt?
I'm fine with it. I think it's a football play. I wouldn't take it out. If it got taken out, I'm not going to lose much sleep over it. I really do like when the Ravens do it with Mark Andrews, you know, someone who's 6'5", 255-ish. I don't want Lamar doing that. Yeah. I do think that, you know, on the flip side, Jalen Hurts is tailor-made to run it. The way his body is built is very different than Lamar's body. I don't see the need to ban it, but if it did get banned, I'm not going to lose sleep. What about you, Ken?
I'm okay both ways. I do kind of like not having it to put more danger in running plays on fourth down and one. I think that it's better for football to have a less decided situation under those circumstances. It has nothing to do with whether the Ravens are good at it or bad at it, but the Ravens are certainly better in a typical fourth and one situation than other teams because they have a lot of misdirection opportunities in their offense as opposed to pushing that. So it may be self-motivated, but I'd be okay with it being banned. A couple other things though came up. Both teams will now have a chance to possess the ball in overtime, including after a touchdown. You know, part of the rules of this, and this is, I'm not in favor of this rule change, by the way. It's a 10-minute overtime is remaining, but what they've done basically guarantees possession to both teams, largely because the Kansas City Chiefs eliminated the Buffalo Bills with a touchdown scored on the first possession of overtime after winning the coin flip. And Buffalo fans, of course, were, this is so unfair. Other NFL fans don't like the Chiefs winning it. And the truth of the matter is the reason that they changed it so that a field goal doesn't end the game is to try and make equivalent the probabilities of winning the game, whether you win or lose the coin flip. And now they've taken that back in the other direction by allowing you to respond with a touchdown. I think it will actually overcompensate and give the team that loses the flip quite possibly a better chance to win the game. Now, remember, you're working with a lot more information if you have the ball second.
Yep.
And there is also the risk that there could be a third possession, of course, in overtime. But you're working with a lot more information when you own the ball second. And that's why college, you know, alternates in terms of that the overtime situation.
Yeah, no, that's certainly interesting. I guess if you win the coin flip in overtime, do you choose to start with the side of the field instead of start with the ball? Is that the strategy? Because don't you want the ability to go second if the opposition were to score a touchdown? Then that way you have the opportunity to go for two. If you do score, right, you have that choice.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be enormous. If there's any kind of win situation, like win favoring one direction, you'd defer for sure. You'd want to, and I think it would be a big advantage to do so. It's just to my way of thinking, this is getting away from what the rule was originally intended to do. Yes, it seems unfair that the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills in this one playoff game without Buffalo ever getting to possess the football. But the reason that the rules were that way is that they were trying to make it as equivalent as possible for the and by the way, they'd already changed it for playoffs prior to this year. So this change is only being applied to the regular season for the first time in 2025. It's just, it doesn't make sense to me. And I think that we'll have more analysis in a year or two. There'll still be limited sample sizes, but I think the likely result is that they will have overcompensated in the wrong direction to make this change.
Agreed.
All right. What else we got? We got expanded use of replay assist. So this is interesting. It only applies to certain flags, and it only applies if a flag was thrown on the play. So you start with when this new expansion of replay assist can occur. Only if a flag was thrown for one of the following five fouls: defenseless player, a face mask, a horse collar tackle, tripping, or running into the or roughing the kicker. So it's actually six, I guess, if you include those as two. If the play is flagged for that, then a coach can challenge if they believe the flag was unwarranted. They cannot challenge if they believe a flag was warranted but was not thrown. Where are you on that, Matt? We might have lost Matt again, having some problems with his audio feed today. I'm not really a fan of that, I've got to say. I do hope that whoever is assisting from the booth is going to be able to look at that and make good judgments. But this is a case where you know, a missed penalty might really be something that you should be able to review. It would create additional use of challenges that could be frustrating, I think, to some people. But this is a fairly limited application of it. And you will notice this does not include pass interference penalties. It's the most significant defensive foul that you can have because of the yardage involved, because of the leverage of the plays it usually happens on. And to me, I think they're to limit it to these five fouls is really limiting the impact of it pretty damn significantly.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Ken. Kind of goes back to the New Orleans Saints playoff scenario where the whole reason why this replay, thing started was because there was a missed flag that seemed fairly egregious that probably cost them the game. I think it's starting to get a little bit messy with the replay. I'm generally in favor of more replay. I'm not sure why exactly it's limited to this six. So I'm kind of milquetoast on the whole thing. I'm just not sure if I'm totally in love with it.
Anyway, we talked a little bit about the missed penalty challenges as well. So it addresses just less than half of the pie, significantly less than half of the pie of really significant fouls. And there's no roughing the passer either, which is the other one. Boy, right. Would I like to see that reviewed. So
that seems to be the most impactful one because there's, it's being thrown haphazardly, it seems like. So feels like that was intentionally left out for what they think is good reason. But I agree with your thoughts there.
All right. The next rule change is the Hawkeye cameras are bumping the chain gang to backup use. Now, these Hawkeye cameras apparently have been in test use already, and they've been using them to avoid some chain measurements. But now they'll be the primary use of measuring for a first down. And so they have I think it's eight K TVs there or 8K cameras they're using around the stadium that are going to locate the ball. I thought it would maybe be chip based, but apparently not. And this is an important distinction is that it will only impact the decision on whether or not a first down was reached and only after spotting the football is done by official. And that's of course done because with forward progress and with a whistle, it requires much more complex technology to spot the football based on when the officials thought forward progress occurred. In part because I think you may blow a whistle for forward progress after the point at which forward progress is stopped. So you can't even really go by the sound of the whistle to blow the play dead. So it's multiple levels of frustration. So even if you had all the inputs from whistles and from sound microphones on the field, whatever you might have, you still might not have a good estimation of when forward progress was stopped to be able to spot the ball electronically. So that's still going to be done by hand. And the NFL seems to think this is going to take about 40 seconds off of each chain measurement, that the Hawkeye system will take about 30 seconds and the chain measurements took about 70 seconds on average.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think the, you know, I'll kind of reserve judgment until I see this one. Hope it improves and that, you know, the game and make something a little bit easier. Not sure how wild the change is going to be, so I would like to see it first.
Yeah, I'm having a problem hearing you now. Maybe something with your microphone not being set up properly. So go ahead with the next item. Our touchbacks getting moved to the 35-yard line. This is the big rule change. This is much bigger than the overtime change because it affects every single kickoff. The injury rates are down with dynamic kickoffs. So the NFL has agreed that they want to add more returns into the game, which are only about 30% of the time did a kick get returned. The receiving team saw a lot of value to not bringing a ball out of the end zone, and that's clear. That's still going to be there. But the kicking team saw a lot of low variance value in just giving the other team the ball at the 30-yard line. And so the rule change says, you can still do that. You kick the ball in the end zone to your heart's delight, but they'll give them the ball at the 35-yard line. Now, I look at that and I say, the 35-yard line is not too much different from kicking the ball out of bounds, which is the 40-yard line, you know, for the penalty, which seems pretty darn extreme. Hey, feelings about that, Matt?
Yeah, agreed. It feels extreme. Going to have to see how this really plays out here.
All right, he's got some volume problems. I think I'm going to finish the show without you, Matt. Sorry about that, but we'll work this out as best we can. So anyway, more incentive for the receiving player to stay in the end zone if they can. A lot of those plays that occur right at the goal line, that receiving player is going to be incented to keep his feet in the end zone, try and catch the ball out over the goal line and haul it back in, where it'll still be a touchback and ball at the 35. So I think there'll be some gamesmanship which accrues from the new rules. And then a couple failed things from the Lions, a couple of things that were not passed. No, there's going to be no automatic first down for a 5-yard defensive holding penalty. That was something the Lions had submitted, not happening. They're staying with the first down rules we've been used to since 1978. There was also a proposal to change the seeding, also from the Lions, of the wild cards, to put wild cards with better records ahead of division winners with worse records. So that stems from Tampa Bay and the LA Rams last year being having not particularly good records, not as good as the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings had the second best record, or maybe it was the third best in the NFC as a whole. And they had to go on the road and they end up losing. The Packers were the next team down. They went on the road and they end up losing too. So something that the Lions, for whatever reason, were also the team to put it in. Lions got to watch it, because you don't want to be the team that puts in every freaking rule change, by the way. People just become, you know, very suspicious and look at those rule changes with a jaundiced eye, of course, if that happens. But that did not get approved either. It's not that it will never be approved. I think they kicked the can down on the road on that one as well, and it might at some future point be discussed, possibly as early as this season. So anyway, that's all we got for today for Friday Morning GM. Really appreciate you joining us. You know, kind of an interesting week, but a slow week at the winter meetings and what in terms of new Ravens moves. And I think they've had a very good offseason so far. But Matt, appreciate you as always joining me. Sorry for some of the technical difficulties we're having today, but I hope folks can still enjoy the episode. And we'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.